Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the gene pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. He is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you in. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Following the Jaguars 30-20 loss to the Bengals, a reminder that tomorrow afternoon, RPM Automotive invites you to the new Northside location, 13131 Wolf Bay Drive. You can have cookies with the Jaguars rookies. They'll be there from 3 till 5 p.m. signing autographs and sharing cookies with you. All right, we're joined by the general manager, Gene Smith. And we've talked about Mondays after losses are always tough. And once you have Mondays after difficult, painful losses in losing streaks, it doesn't get much tougher.
It doesn't, but if you're going to be in the NFL, certainly as a player, a coach, or a scout, if you're going to enjoy the good, you got to be man enough to handle the bad. And certainly yesterday, there was plenty of that. Did not leave a good taste in our mouth, and I feel very confident we'll be motivated this week in preparation for the Steelers.
All right, one of the things that we will do, we'll get into some of the different issues. Offense, defense, special teams all had some issues they had to deal with yesterday. But I want to start with some of the positives that we saw yesterday, and then we'll make sure we give that enough attention. The opening drive was very sharp, and Jaguars went right downfield on a 10-play, 80-yard drive. Maurice Jones-Drew was running, finding holes. You had third down conversions, third and three to Jason Hill, then a third and seven to Mike Thomas, and on the drive, Mojo had 42 yards rushing. Gabbert was 3 of 4 for 38 yards. And then a terrific run by Mojo to get into the end zone. And, boy, it looked like maybe it would be a streak-ending kind of day.
Well, we certainly had it rolling that first drive. Maurice is a tone setter for our offense. The run to get in the end zone was a tremendous effort on his part. We just got to get more players moving in that direction, playing with that tempo, that aggressiveness, and our offense will definitely take a step. I felt very good, you know, the way we came out. We just weren't able to finish some drives there in the first half that could have made it a different ball game from a momentum standpoint and helping our defense out.
And the touchdown pass to Jason Hill, of course, in the second half was a big play. Jack Del Rio commenting today in his Monday press conference that to see the quarterback recognize that and make that throw, and I mean not just the ability to make the throw, but the ability to recognize, diagnose that play as it was unfolding was really a plus.
It was a plus. It's one thing that we used to say about Peyton Manning, when you studied him on film every single year, if someone made a mistake and there was a receiver open, it was rare that he ever missed the receiver. He would always take advantage of mistakes in the secondary in particular, and that was an opportunity that Blaine found Jason, and Jason finished it off with the speed to get into the end zone for a touchdown.
And a couple of situations where you had injuries you were dealing with, starters who didn't play. Derek Cox at cornerback, Will Middleton stepped up, thought he played a pretty nice game. And then in terms of, got some pass rush. Looks like Aaron Campman may be this week, but even without Campman, got some pass rush up front with guys like Mincy and John Chick, who got his first NFL sack.
He did, and he's been showing a lot of pressure every opportunity he's had to get in there in our sub packages. And him and Mincy are a lot alike. Mm-hmm. I mean, they play with exceptional energy, and they're showing the ability to create some rush off the edge. And that's great to see out of those two guys at this point in the season.
And also another positive I'll mention, Dwight Lowry. I thought a very veteran kind of play on the interception, kind of baited the quarterback a little bit, rookie quarterback, and was able to step in and make the interception.
It was a good interception, and I think you're right, Cole. he was trying to bait the rookie. Obviously, he ended up throwing the ball. He picked it off. It would have been nice to see him actually get into the end zone. He got us down to the 3-yard line. We've had a quarterback now twice keep us out of the end zone after an interception. But it was a great run, great effort on his part. And we would like to finish that offensively and turn it into a touchdown. Didn't happen. We got 3 out of it.
In his defense, I think there was probably more traffic for him than the previous week when you talk about the quarterback being right in the middle there. But it looked like he picked out the quarterback, said, if I'm going to run over somebody, I'm going to run at the quarterback. And then Dalton went low, and he went head over heels, and that was it. So those were some of the positives out of yesterday's 30-20 game. Clearly, when you lose a ball game, a lot of things to talk about, and the special teams really being a major focus from fans after the game and today. Any idea about why the problem with punting with Matt Turk yesterday?
I don't have an answer, and I'm not going to make any excuses. Obviously, it wasn't good enough for us to win that phase, and it's not just the punt team. There's other things. I have expressed that in prior weeks. You know, you can say, well, wind played into it for the returners, even at times for the long snapper. But, you know, both punters have the same conditions, and it wasn't a winning effort by any stretch.
And, of course, Cecil Shorts really struggled in terms of punt returns, and it looked like wind may have had some impact on the way he was judging the ball, but it looked he just wasn't picking the ball up. You know, sometimes you hear an outfielder say, I didn't see the ball coming off the bat. Same kind of situation where it looked like he was having a hard time gauging depth maybe on some of those things.
Well, a couple things. You got to spot him just like any returner based on the weather conditions in terms of where he should be at and how that punter was kicking the ball, let's say in pregame or during the course of the game up until that point. I think the one thing we can do a better job of is holding up the gunners to give anyone who's back there an opportunity to at least fair catch the ball under those conditions. And if not on a punting in situation, it'd give us a greater chance for that ball maybe to roll into the end zone if he doesn't catch it.
How do you think Blaine Gabbert played yesterday?
I thought he played good.
Yeah, looks like he's making progress each week. We're seeing some different things. We talked about diagnosing that play. Two throws that really stood out to me. One that everybody's talking about where he put it right over the corner in front of the safety, you know, that sweet spot kind of throw. But he had another one earlier in the ball game on an out route. It was kind of a nondescript play. I think it went for 4 or 5 yards. And I believe it was Jason Hill. But on a sideline out route, with the velocity and the timing of it, and there wasn't a lot of room, wasn't a lot of daylight between the receiver and the defender, but he put it right on the money where you need to on those out routes. And, again, you and I talked going back to training camp that he's got some Troy Aikman-type traits to me in terms of the way he throws the ball, and Aikman was always so accurate with that pass in particular. That really stood out to me. We haven't seen that too much around here.
Well, again, he's got tremendous anticipation. Now, he's got to get some more help. We got to drop a drop too many times in key situations where it could sustain a drive. One of the better plays I thought he made was when we had Rush come off the left side, and he spun out of it and you know, took off on a scramble to his left, and he is a guy that runs to throw, and he spotted Mike Thomas coming across as he scrambled for first down. It was an excellent throw, moving to his left to get the ball to Mike on the move.
All right, we'll talk about some of the other issues, the snap at the end, a couple of defensive breakdowns in key situations. Also coming up, remember, it's the Scout's Eye Unsung Player. If you want to put in your guess, you can via Twitter or via Facebook. You Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars and via Twitter. Just tweet it to me at Cole Pepper. Got a lot of guesses already on the Unsung Player. I have mine as well. And we'll have that for you coming up next segment. The winner will get an autographed football, official NFL football from the general manager and whoever is the Unsung Player this week. If you're a parent or guardian of a girl 6 to 17 years of age, stop by your local Bell's store. Register your child to become a member of the Junior Roar, performing at halftime during the Jags-Bucks game December 11th. Registration is now through November 6th. For official rules, visit your nearby Bell's store. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
Here's Dalton in the shotgun with one back, the tight end. pressure coming. He's going to get hit and sacked. John Chick got him back at the six-yard line. That's two on the ball game for the Jaguars.
And his first career sack in the National Football League. And congratulations to John Chick, who's had a long road to make that play.
All right, one of the Jaguars' defensive plays made by the former Canadian Football League Defensive Player of the Year. John Chick with a sack yesterday. Jaguars Monday continues right here after a 30-20 loss to the Bengals. Injury update now brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville's Circle of Care. Two injuries from yesterday's game. Eugene Monroe had the shoulder neck thing come up again and be a factor for him. He left the ballgame. Drew Coleman left the game, as is described, head. If it's a head, concussion concerns usually is what that winds up meaning. And then today, Jack Del Rio saying in his Monday press conference, Aaron Kampman could be back this week. And if Kampman is back looking like Kampman, that's more firepower for that defense. And certainly need it going up against Big Ben and company. We'll talk about the Steelers a little bit later on the broadcast. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. All right. I don't want to sit here sounding like I'm just running down the, you know, issue problem after problem, but some of these things that I know are nagging at fans. Fourth down failures to stop get the Bengals off the field. A.J. Green and Gresham both converting. Third down conversions overall, Cincinnati 8 of 19, 2 of 3 on fourth down. And it seemed like Dalton maybe is showing what he showed a lot in college, which is pretty resourceful guy. I mean, he when the game's on the line, he looked like he was pretty comfortable back there.
He is resourceful, and he's a heady football player. He does have a good football brain. I thought he came up with some good throws at key times in the game. We did not bring a lot of pressure against him. It was primarily four-man and some three-man pressure. And when he had an opportunity to set his feet to throw, he certainly did it effectively when needed.
Have other teams been blitzing him more? You know, he's had a decent start to the year as a rookie, but are you seeing teams blitz rookie quarterbacks now, or is it more in vogue to drop more guys into coverage and make him make a decision?
Well, it just depends on you know, your personnel and your philosophy. I think our defense did a tremendous job with the situations that we were put in. They can be very trying at times when you hold them to 162 passing yards and 2.5 per rush.
Overall, it's tough to blame the defense for what happened.
No question.
There were some breakdowns, but 239, something like that, yards given up, something it was under 300, I believe, once again this year.
Yes, and the other thing is, you know, we had Cox out, and then during the course of the game in the third quarter, Drew Coleman, who was playing some outstanding football, he was out of the game. Mm-hmm. So we had some situations there where
you had a rookie and undrafted rookie, Kevin Rutland, was in there.
Right. Yeah. We were going to line up and force them to execute, and if they did complete a pass, we were going to make the tackle.
All right. On the offense, the failures to get into the end zone in goal-to-go situations, and it wasn't first and goal from the 9 or whatever, but getting down there inside the 5. And I heard a lot of fans complaining about play calling. I didn't have as big an issue with play calling. I mean, it was just that looks like an execution situation. You know, Mercedes had a chance. Gabbert's went ahead one throw that didn't go right. You had a breakdown and blocking on one side, and then Mojo tried to make something out of it and wound up losing more yards. I'm certain that you're frustrated by it as well as everybody is when you know, you get down there on the you know the rare occasions where you're goal to go and you don't get in, it's a frustrating thing.
Well, you always think, you know, if you get the ball inside the 5, you get 4 tries, you should be able to put it in, especially the way we came out that first drive and we were gashing them. But I think it does go back to something you said, Cole. It's not always about the play calling. It's about playmaking. And we had some opportunities, and we didn't take advantage of them.
And it was interesting, one other goal-to-go situation where a replay actually probably cost the Jaguars a chance at a touchdown. And there, on the play where Maurice wound up putting his hand down, And his knee was either down or close to down. It would have been a, you know, they kept showing the replay on TV. They never showed the replay of Gabbert scrambling over to his left and lunging for the pylon. They finally did afterwards, and it looked, again, I just had one look at it. I don't know if you've had a better look at it. Like Gabbert, when he got over there, lunged at the pylon, and that the ball hit the pylon, which would have been a touchdown. There was never the opportunity to see that in order to challenge it after that point, because the, you know, networks never got the replay up.
Well, it was my understanding that they said his foot stepped out.
Yeah, and looking
and
at the replay,
film,
didn't look
his
like
foot
it.
Did not step
right.
out.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a number of situations through the course of every game where there are some missed calls or there are some situations that should have been reviewed. And, again, we had our opportunities. We can't sit here and make excuses why we're not doing things other than just executing better what is called in situations throughout the course of the ball game.
You know, the other side of this story in terms of key plays, obviously the snap at the end, you can make the case that the extra point that was missed actually might have cost the Jaguars some time. When the extra point missed at the end of the first half, it made it 13-13 at the time. Make sure I have my numbers right. 13-13 at the time. So a little bit later on, you may have seen you know, Cincinnati, instead of going for it on fourth down, kick a field goal there to tie the ball game. And then you may be looking at having, oh, I don't know, 2.5, 3 minutes, something. Maybe the urgency was different or whatever. And at the risk, you don't want to sit here and point fingers, isn't going to do much. But what the world happened on the snap? Miscommunication at the end there? Just guys not being on the same page?
Well, Brad Meester is a stand-up guy. Mm-hmm. And he took the blame for that. And, you know, football is a team sport. And I don't think there's ever one play or one player that causes a loss. There were situations through the course of that game that we could have done a number of things better that would have enabled us to be in better position to win the game. And that's unfortunate that it did happen, especially Brad Meester. I mean, this guy prepares as good as anyone on our team, you know, throughout the time he's been here. So I feel for him. He's got a lot of pride in how he performs.
Yeah, and I'll say this, and I'll editorialize here if you'll allow me for a moment. Fans are in right now in such a tizzy over the 1-4 start, understandably, that any time anybody makes one mistake, it's fire that guy, get rid of that guy, fire that guy. Not saying that there aren't occasions where guys should lose their job, but, you know, Brad Meester's been involved in two plays that have been in kind of the similar kind of situations that have not gone well. Place blame wherever you want, but he's got like 10 years of history behind him. You know what kind of player he is. You know what kind of guy he is. He's been here longer than anybody else. And it's silly for fans to sit there and just say, fire him, fire him, fire him, if they really believe that's the solution to everything. There are times when it is, but it's not the solution for everything. So I'll get off my soapbox for a moment. All right, coming up, we will get some of your comments and questions, a lot of them coming in via Twitter. Also, facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Go to the thread that's already started there. I have a bunch of entries there. All right, time now for the Scout's Eye unsung player. Last week, I was proud to have picked this one up. And this week, somebody else in this room, namely radio legend Joe Fortunato, was right on top of this one. Who's our Scout's Eye player this week?
John Chick. John had a sack in the game. He was disruptive when he was in there. He also had a PBU on a zone drop, which was outstanding. Mm-hmm. And certainly Jeremy Mincy and Paul Posluszny played outstanding games in our defense, but our unsung performer for this game was John Chick.
All right, so congratulations, John Chick, the Scout's Eye unsung player. We do have a couple of people, actually I think three or four, who have chosen that, so we will put the names in a hat and draw out for the John Chick and Gene Smith autographed football as part of the Scout's Eye unsung player. All right, we'll take time out. News here at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we'll get into the Gene Pool, talking about kickers and punters. We'll also get to your questions and comments. You can get your voice to be heard via Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars or on Twitter. Just tweet it to me at Colepepper, Colepepper. Fans, just text BBQ to 72239 and enter for a chance to win the Sonny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You could hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. We're back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
You can't stop it, folks. You just can't do it.
Maurice Jones-Drew with a touchdown run to get the Jaguars on the board yesterday, part of the 30-20 loss to the Bengals. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith continues. Become a part of the Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to JaguarsAdvantage.com. All right, let's jump into the gene pool. Take a look at the DNA of a particular position, in this case, positions. Maybe it's apropos, not playing this way. We set them all up beforehand, but here we go with kickers and punters. Typically, both kickers and punters, about 190 pounds on average from my in-depth research of one website. And 5'10 on average height for kickers, 6'2 for punters. 40 speed, insignificant, but 4'9-ish, something like that. What do you have on the numbers?
Well, right in line with what you have.
And so is there an ideal build, or do the numbers matter to you at all when looking at kickers and punters? I mean, the measurables, are those things height, weight, speed, any of that? Do any of those combine things matter to you?
Well, typically with punters, they are, taller, longer levers. If you look at a couple of the great ones, like a Ray Guy and a Reggie Roby, they were all, longer levered, or they're both longer levered guys, 6'3 for Ray Guy and 6'4 for Reggie Roby. But, I think in general, the punters are taller and the kickers tend to be shorter.
And you can find a kicker in almost any size, though. I mean, you can, Mike Hollis here for a long time is a little guy. Sebastian Janikowski is a big guy and a half. You can find him, and both were, Mike was, and Sebastian continues to be a terrific kicker.
No question. And I think a field goal kicker, you want somebody that can also do kickoffs if you have the ability to do so. And then with a punter, you like to get a guy that's a holder. Mm-hmm. With both positions, I mean, I think the brain's got to work like a golfer. And then certainly they got to have some leg whip to them, and someone would consider them more so a soccer player than maybe a football player. But I think the key thing is from the neck up, the guys who sustain careers typically can handle the pressure, have poise. Because a lot of these guys recycle, through a couple, two or three teams, and then they stick somewhere for a good period of time because they are able to handle the mental aspect of the position.
Yeah, and as far as kickers are concerned, I'll bring up two examples of guys who didn't handle the pressure particularly well, and one who just kept coming back and was tenacious and made a great career out of it. Scott Norwood, of course, is a very common one. Missed the field goal in the Super Bowl, and that really started his career on a downward spiral. Lynn Elliott, same thing, missed three field goals in a playoff game in Kansas City and against Indianapolis back in 95 or something, and never really did anything after that. But another guy who, with the Kansas City connection, Nick Lowry got cut by eight teams and finally landed in Kansas City, and at one point was the most accurate kicker in NFL history, and has been surpassed since then. But you find these guys who sometimes need a little time after college before they really settle in, whether it's body maturing or mentally maturing, whatever it is, or just getting the right, being in the right situation.
No question. Obviously, you want leg strength at both positions, and you want guys who are mechanically sound, because usually with the punter, you'd like to get a two-step, sometimes or two and a half. Most kickers have a quick approach. You don't see a lot of leg time there, but they both got to have some leg strength. The kicker's got to be able to get the ball up quick, so trajectory is key. But again, what they have between the ears is very telling, especially for the kicker who has the ability to hone in and kick the ball very effectively over a long period of time. It takes a special guy to do that.
All right, and we also wrap things up with the gene pool talking about who's best, best kicker, best punter that you've encountered that's in the league now, what have you. Who do you want to tag as a best?
Well, in the league, I'd say Leckler for Oakland and Morstead, who we saw with New Orleans. They probably got the two best legs in the NFL, all-time punter. Maybe it's Ray Guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, Joss is having a nice year. He started out this year like he did last year. I mean, he's 8-for-8 in field goals made. He had a long of 55. I would say, you know, all-time, I'd go with Morton Anderson. He's the all-time leader in total points.
And you probably have a little soft spot for him anyway, based on
well, he helped
one
us
attempt.
Out. Yeah,
and that didn't find its mark. All right, that is the gene pool as we examine the DNA of a particular position. Next week, we get the fullback, perhaps a vanishing breed in the National Football League. That'll be next week on the gene pool. All right, time now to get some of your questions and comments via facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars and also Twitter. You can tweet to me at Cole Pepper, Joe Fortunato.
Yeah, we get social thanks to our good friends at CopyFax, and we check right now Facebook. Gene, there's a two-part question from Doug. He says, Lowry, Landry, and Coleman have been nice additions to our defensive back seven. What's the severity of Drew's head injury, and will Cox be able to go against the Steelers?
Well, I don't know the severity of Drew. I lean on the medical staff. I know we're trying to take care of our players in the right way. So if he's cleared and ready to play, he'll certainly help us out. The second part of the question again
was Derek Cox. Is he going to be able to go against the Steelers?
We're optimistic that he will. He's a guy certainly that has helped us in the secondary when he's in there because he's aware and he's a bigger corner with length. But I feel like our secondary as a whole, in terms of giving up exposed plays the last 2 years, that's the one thing this year. There's been better communication, better eye discipline, and just, you know, better overall play in being heady back there.
All right, we get some more questions here via Twitter.com. You can tweet to me at Cole Temper. Would the Jags have more success in the passing game with both Zach Thomas, or rather with both Zach Miller and Mercedes Lewis out there at the same time, like a Gronkowski and Hernandez situation in New England? What can you do with you got two different kinds of tight ends, but style wise, that might be a decent comparison between with Gronkowski and Hernandez.
Well, when Zach is healthy, we're able to do that. Because he does have some rare athletic ability for the tight end position. I think what people try to do is match personnel. So you'll get a base defense out there, and so you get an opportunity to mismatch a linebacker with a tight end like Zach Miller in particular. You know, and certainly Mercedes Lewis will have more of an impact as the season goes on, but you could really stress a defense having both those guys in the game.
You know what else stresses a defense? Having Tom Brady throwing the football. That's we've seen that. I mean, 30 points every game for the Patriots. Not that Hernandez and Gronkowski aren't both good players, because they're both fairly high picks for tight ends. I think Gronkowski was were they both second-round picks, something like that? Usually the Patriots try to stockpile those second-round picks, but having Tom Brady back there makes a difference. And that goes to a question, a quarterback question from Randy, who's asking about Gabbert at this point and his progression. He's asking if he's better than Garrard at this point. You probably don't want to, I don't know if you want to go in that direction in terms of answering, but just talking about Gabbert's development here in the first three starts as a rookie.
Well, I like what I've seen, and I get a chance to see more. Like I've said the last couple weeks, the things that have been very encouraging that aren't always available to the fans is what's going on in practice. And so I feel like he's going to continue to grow. He wants to be a great player. And as we're able to function better around him, we will continue to grow as an offense. We've got one way to go as an offense, and I'm confident that he'll lead us as the year goes on into a lot better execution on the offensive side.
All right, more questions via Twitter.com and Facebook as well coming up here in just a bit. Also, When we come back, we'll take a look at some of the key matchups to watch on Sunday against the Pittsburgh Steelers and a quick review of the AFC South. If there was a silver lining in yesterday's ball game, the rest of the AFC South all lost, so no lost ground by the Jaguars as far as that's concerned. Houston, Tennessee, and the Colts all going down to defeat. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
And it's second and long for Gabbert. Jones and Jones drew in the eye. Thomas now goes from the slot on the left to the wide right position. And Gabbert's in the pocket, has time. Looks, shuffles, turns, and throws, and he's got a man all alone, and Jason Hill's got this one at the 30. He's going to the end zone! 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jacksonville!
Blown coverage.
74 yards, and the Jaguars have the lead.
The fifth longest touchdown pass in Jaguars history, and the longest since 2007. Gabbert to Hill, 74 yards, gave the Jaguars a 20-16 lead. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith continues here on a Monday evening. Jaguars will try to do what doesn't happen very often, and that is go on the road to snap a losing streak in Pittsburgh next week. We'll talk about that Steelers matchup here in just a bit, but first, a look back at what happened over the weekend with the AFC South. Houston Texans lost to Oakland 25-20. Texans are 3-2. An emotional game, certainly, for the Raiders coming off the death of Al Davis.
No question, and it came right down to the wire, and Oakland was able to hold off the Texans for a win.
Any reflection on Al Davis and his time? Did you have much of an opportunity to interact with him?
I really didn't. Mine was more from what I read and what people from that organization would express to me. I mean, he certainly was someone that was very knowledgeable about the game because of his background. He had such a unique perspective that most people don't have as an owner, and he was about doing everything the right way for the players, and you know, his success speaks for itself.
Pete Banaszak, of course, tells some great stories about his time in Oakland with the Raiders. Titans lose to Pittsburgh 38-17. Big Ben with five touchdown passes. Boy, the Titans have been a Jekyll and Hyde team this year, haven't they?
They have. You know, they lost Kenny Britt for the season, and he was their one guy that I think, you know, they would say was their number one and clearly their playmaker on offense in the passing game. But, you know, I think sometimes things occur during the course of a game and things start to snowball, and certainly Pittsburgh's the type of team with Roethlisberger at quarterback that can take advantage of you.
You mentioned playing without Kenny Britt. Houston played without Andre Johnson and then lost Mario Williams for the year in the game yesterday. So, again, and you can look at 1-4 and you can say, geez, things are terrible. Or you can say, geez, 1-4 and yet still the division is not decided. I mean, obviously Jaguars have to play better to turn things around, but it's not as if you have somebody running away and hiding in the AFC South right now.
No, you're looking at Houston and us. We got a win. And Tennessee and Indianapolis doesn't have one. So we're actually, in for a team that's sitting where we're at, in a good position in our division in actuality. And I would like to think, as we're getting some players back here this week and next week, that we'll have a chance, if we can start executing better, to do some very good things down the stretch.
And, of course, the Colts lost to Kansas City 28-24. They had a big lead and gave it up to the Chiefs, who aren't a very good team. They're banged up with the injuries now. Colts winless on the season and joining Miami and St. Louis in that regard. Boy, what a game yesterday. And it looked like, well, here go the Colts, going to get their first win, and the Chiefs, who have been battered and bruised, what could they possibly put up in the second? All of a sudden, here they come storming back.
Yeah, they've done a good job, I think, of kind of holding it together to this point. They've had some injuries, and sometimes you have seasons like that. So they're having trying times. The Colts are having trying times, but they found a way to make a couple more plays to win that game.
All right, so that's a look at the AFC South. Undefeated teams remaining in the NFL, you've got the Packers and then the Lions, who play tonight against Chicago. Old black and blue division kind of match up. We'll see how things go. The Bears offensively are really triggered by Matt Forte, the running back. And we'll see if they have any answer for Calvin Johnson. Nobody's had an answer for him so far this year. All right, let's look ahead to Sunday's game in Pittsburgh. The site of, I think we would all agree, the last golden moment for the Jaguars, the victory in the playoffs in 2007. Going on the road, that was a year the Jaguars won twice on the road that year in Pittsburgh. How different is that Steelers team now than they were back then?
Well, they've got some injuries, like a number of teams in the NFL at this point. But I would say this, on offense, Walker and Ward, along with Roethlisberger, they can certainly stress your secondary. And then defensively, even though Harrison is out, they move Timmons outside, which he certainly can play out there. He's played inside for him when Harrison is healthy. And then Woodley on the opposite side, they certainly have two guys that can bring it off the edge. So the matchups clearly are our tackles against their outside linebackers. And then you could also say our two outside corners against Wallace and Ward. So it'll be, I think, a very good football game up in Pittsburgh. I hope we have the same kind of weather up there they had this past Sunday. I understand it was 80 degrees and sunny.
Yeah, you'll take that after the nor'easter we've had here the last couple of days. There were some comparisons made between Blaine Gabbert and Ben Roethlisberger when Gabbert was going through the draft process in terms of being a pretty big guy. I don't know that he's quite as thick as Ben at this point, but a guy who can move and runs to pass. Is that where most of the comparisons come from, you think?
I think so. You know, they both got strong arms, and they both can create or extend plays because they are bigger, and they do have the ability to move and make plays outside the pocket. So I do think they run to throw guys, yes.
You know, one of the questions that have been asked this year is about, you know, are the Steelers getting old? I mean, Warren Sapp made the popular thing. Are the same guys who have been the guys you have to recognize on defense still those guys? So you mentioned the outside linebackers, and Polamalu's another guy. Do you still have to know where those guys are on the field?
Well, I think you do. I think the one thing with, you know, experience, or you could say age, comes wisdom. Mm-hmm. I do think they're a very heady defense. And certainly Dick LeBeau is in his early to mid-70s. There's a lot of wisdom in his brain. So, I mean, I feel like the continuity they've had on their staff on the defensive side and the players that they've got in their system, you know, they're going to be a difficult team to play against every year because of what they have, I think, built, and they've had patience staying with what they do because they believe in it.
You look at some of the defensive minds that Blaine Gabbert has been exposed to here as the opposition early on. Marvin Lewis last week, Greg Williams the week before. Now here comes the Steelers and that whole defensive brain trust. He's going to see a lot of creative and different things from defenses here, and it's not going to take long for him to kind of get that baptism by fire.
Not at all. I think, you know, we did play the Jets, so I know he got a chance to get a taste of seeing Jets them too, on
yep.
film, you know. So I feel like the film work there. And then, obviously, he saw some pressure from New Orleans. So without question, I do feel like each game will be a learning experience for him, and I'm certain he'll be ready for this one.
All right, we'll be keeping an eye on things. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff from the Three Rivers area on Sunday. We'll have coverage beginning at 10 o'clock with the Sunny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. Sudeth pregame show then followed by the broadcast. And later this week, more commentary and questions. You can get your word in. Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, the Jack Del Rio Show. Brian Sexton will have the head coach to talk about yesterday's ball game and look ahead to the matchup against the Steelers. Then on Wednesday, it's Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Brian Sexton, Jeff Lockerman, and John Osher in here from 6 until 8 o'clock to discuss the Jaguars and all things NFL. Gene, thanks a lot for stopping by again here on Monday.
Thank you, Cole, and Joe as well, and all the Jaguar fans giving us support.
For Joe Fortunato, for the general manager Gene Smith, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday, and good night from Jaguars Central.